This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. It was almost exactly a year ago that the Compass paid a visit to the last living legitimate resident of the forbidden paradise of Protection Island. This week on the Compass, we revisit that adventure. So now, let's go inside the Compass.
There's a chick!
Seagull!
Horror seal! Oh, right there.
There's so many!
Look, you can see him underwater.
Look! Uh-oh. There's a baby!
There's a baby!
It's a baby horror seal! Look, it's a mom and a dad, too.
Oh, this is great, and the water is so clear.
I know! This is awesome! Protection Island. It says Protection Island.
So we gotta add Harlequin duck to our list.
Did you put bald eagle on it?
I did. I've already got it up to 3. I think that's all we've seen.
No, I think I've seen 4.
This was the discussion between my wife, Monica Fletcher, and my friend Ross Anderson's 8-year-old grandson, Mahal, as Ross maneuvered his boat into the snug hidden harbor at the bluff end of the long sand spit on Protection Island, the marine wildlife refuge that stands at the entrance to Discovery Bay like a sentinel, its banks swarming with life on a perfect midsummer day. Families of pigeon guillemots with their bright red feet and equally red gullets paddled across sparkling wavelets, and the shore was lined with basking harbor seals and thousands of nesting glaucous-winged gulls and their newly hatched chicks. We were met at the dock by Ross's friend Marty Bluewater, who at age 67 is the last inholder of a private cabin on the idyllic island, which is off-limits to everyone but him and those fortunate few, like us, whom he invites as guests, along with assorted wildlife researchers with permits from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which operates the refuge. The island is protected because it is the most important breeding ground for seabirds in the state, with an estimated 70% of the seabirds in the Puget Sound nesting here, and includes what may be the largest nesting colony of rhinoceros auklets in the world. So normally, visitors are allowed no closer than 200 yards offshore. Needless to say, we felt very privileged. Bluewater left us to birdwatch on the beach while he drove his pickup truck up island to fetch the van he uses to ferry his guests around the island, apologizing that it might take a while as he had been having trouble getting it started and would probably have to hotwire it. So we settled in with our binoculars and very quickly noticed some disturbing behavior. 2 adult gulls seemed to be trying to kill one another until they suddenly broke apart and one grabbed a nearby chick for a moment before the fight recommenced.
She's protecting her baby, I see.
What do they do? This is terrible. Get away. She's kind of horrifying.
Oh, look. They eat each other's chicks?
Yeah, sometimes they do. And what? The eagles like the chicks too.
The eagles probably love them.
There's the eagle.
Oh boy, there's the eagle. Papa, eagle! They have bigger problems to worry about than us.
Yeah.
Way bigger.
You watch what happens when the eagle flies close by.
See?
That's when the gulls get excited. They don't like eagles. They're not particularly fond of us, but eagles, they really don't.
We were relieved not to have witnessed a chick actually getting slaughtered by one of its own kind when we saw Blue Water's enormous guano-covered Ram 350 passenger van picking its way towards us down the steep gravel track from the top of the bluff. The van pulled up at the end of the dock, and Blue Water stepped out. Bronze-skinned and powerfully built with a leonine shock of steel-gray hair, he looked every part the Indian chief, although his Pink Floyd t-shirt and black surfer shorts detracted a bit from that impression. Bluewater is, in fact, one part Shawnee, one part Choctaw, with the rest of mixture of Hispanic and Irish, I learned later. Having forgetfully switched the engine off upon arrival, he had to hotwire it again before we started up the hill.
How quickly we forget. going in.
Oh, you have to start it from under the hood?
Well, I've got to do it. We think the problem's the ignition switch, and I got a new one I'm going to put in later.
What's he doing under the hood?
Sticking a pair of needle nose pliers into a plug.
Oh.
just jumping up one.
So the problem is somewhere between where that connection is and here, which would likely be this, but machines.
Yeah.
I'd give anything to just say, well, my machines work for 1 week.
Now, what did you want such a big van for out here?
Just for hauling stuff, and I usually have lots of people out for parties and things. I haven't had too long. I was looking for something without all the computer stuff, but that was in good shape. This is like some church group owned it or something. Uh-huh. It only had 60,000 miles on it. It was like brand new, not a dent. Everything was nice inside.
And then you brought it out here.
The road maintenance here consists of, you mow the roads.
So do you have to share the expense of maintaining the road?
Well, when they took it over, they had to pay me the value of my land and the little house that I have, but then they subtracted amount of 1% of that value per year based on your life expectancy, and that covered all the future maintenance and everything. So, so now I don't pay anything at all.
I see. So they paid you up front for?
Yeah. Once they turned it into a refuge, I mean, I got life used to be here, but I don't technically own the property.
You're an inholder.
Yeah, an inholder. So they have to pay you for the land, so you can never sell it.
Now, you were the only one who held out?
No, there was about 20, and it's all the rest have gone for one reason or another.
Is that mostly like they died or?
Well, you could take life use or a smaller amount, and some did it because of the money, because they had to pay back some, but most of them didn't. Some of them just thought, well, 15 years, that's going to be a long time. And I didn't know for like 5 years, and I knew, everybody knew each other, that none of these other people took life use but me. And then a couple of them, one guy spent $50,000 fighting it in court to try to get it extended. Of course, they have no reason to help anybody, so they couldn't. So I found out, I was the only one that took life use. So I was the youngest one at the time, so it cost me more.
So had other people build houses out here, and then they got torn down when they...
Yeah, there weren't too many, because about 3 years after I bought in 71, there were some water issues and some other issues, and then there was the big move to turn it into a refuge. So it was just starting to go. So I started building, and when I did, there was maybe five or six other cabins that had been built. So a couple of real nice ones. And so a lot of people were probably getting ready to, but then everything kind of came to a halt right before it would have gotten more developed. And now most of those have been torn down.
Were you weren't opposed to building creating the refuge?
Oh, no, I totally supported the refuge. Second time I came on the island after I bought it, I realized it should never be developed. And but my background was parks and zoos and stuff, so...
Oh, really? That was your training?
Yeah, I was business manager at Woodland Park Zoo. And that's where I retired from. And then I was with Seattle Parks for years.
But so in regards to the refuge out here, you don't have any kind of official capacity? Or
no,
anything?
No, nothing at all. I'm just the inholder that just didn't see me gone.
So they're wishing you a short life?
Yeah. And my friends are wishing me a long life. Well, I've already passed the long life part, but a longer life.
How old are you?
67.
You've had this for almost 45 years now.
Yeah, it's just a total part of my whole adult existence.
How much time do you actually spend out here?
It varies, but at least there's a couple eagles right there. I suppose a third of my life is out here. I've actually lived out here one time for 2 years, and I'm probably going to spend most of the winter out here, but even when I say I'm living here, I'm never here for more than 3 or 4 days at a time, usually going into town or going back to Seattle for some reason or something. But Cape George makes that all that possible, where I can just come and go as I want. So not much different than living anywhere else. I'm just always making a big circle between Seattle, Tacoma, and then wherever. So when I bought it, the developers were going strong, and they flew you over in an airplane. There was an airstrip here, and the salesmen were the pilots, and they just tell you this island dream. I saw it from the air, and it looked so interesting that I was sold before we landed. And it was in September, it was raining, and I thought, this is a bad day to look at some land and get here, and it was just like a circle of sun. Because the rainfall on the island is the same as Los Angeles.
Well, now, those developers must have put up some resistance when the idea for a refuge came
up. Oh, they did. They wanted to get their money back, but there were some other issues, so in a way, they were glad to maybe kind of sell out, too, because they got a little... there were some permitting problems and water issue problems, and so it kind of turned into a bit of a fiasco.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
I mean, they put a lot into it at first. I mean, they had water systems all around. There were roads all through here, and they built the marina and that water tower. There were 600 lots sold there when I bought mine. I mean, I was lucky to get a waterfront lot.
Well, now, who led the political campaign to turn it into a refuge?
Well, one lady was Eleanor Stoops, but it was basically Audubon Society. Uh-huh. And because of the 70% of all the seabirds in Puget Sound nest on the island, that's why it's so important ecologically. So, and I supported all that.
Our first stop was at the top of the bluff overlooking the spit. This time, Blue Water left the engine running.
Yes, favorite spot.
And there's some holes here, so you gotta be careful and walk slowly. Some friends of mine got married here.
There's a hole right there. I found one.
Some young friends that I met that were they were the caretakers here for a while, because it's either like young kids that become caretakers before they got to go out and face reality, or a retired couple, usually one of the two. And then we became really good friends. In fact, they built a house in Cape George, even though they live in Portland, because they liked it so much out here. The big wedding had about 60 people, and it was quite the production.
I guess it's not hard to get permission to do things like that if you know the right people.
Technically, but yeah, I can have technically as many guests as I want, you know. So
Ross was telling me that you've used that as a sort of fundraiser.
Yeah,
for various organizations,
like the Centrum and the Rotary Club, and Jefferson Land Trust and the Wooden Boat Festival. Some people pay like anywhere from $800 to $1,200 to come out for 3 or 4 hours. We'll just do what we're doing. Look around, just show them around. So, yeah, I thought it's been a neat deal to be able to raise money and meet some interesting people. And, you know, probably raised maybe $50,000, I suppose, now over the last 10 years. So that's a good thing. Actually, the feds got on me one time because someone complained, oh, they're selling the island. And I said, no, we're not selling anything. I said, this costs me money. But I said, it's for the public good. It's education. And I said, you guys should be doing this. Mm-hmm. Then they kind of left me alone. I says, you know, I can go do like you guys used to complain when I was in my 20s, you know, I can start having big parties out here. You know, I can bring a band out here. Well, you want me to do that instead? But we have a pretty good relationship now, so there's not really many problems, conflicts between me and the Fish and Wildlife. So we all work together.
Well, I guess a lot of the time it's just you and the caretaker out.
Yeah, that's really all. Yeah, there's not much that goes on here, really. The whole idea is just for it to be a passive reserve with no intrusion, human intrusion. So, yeah, basically it's all pretty quiet. Not much happens. And there used to be a lot more boat kids would come over, or more kayakers and stuff. But now with GPS and the internet, people have been chased off, so they know there's hardly anything anymore. So that's really nice, too.
What's it like in the winter?
Winter's my favorite time, right? Because of the storms and the waves, and you see things you just don't see anywhere else. So, and it can get to be 70, 80 miles an hour. It's not unusual. I've had my windows blown out 3 times, but now I've put in just real strong windows and engineered them right, so I shouldn't have a problem. They'll probably outlast me now.
Yeah, but not by much, because as soon as you're gone, the cabin will be taken down as well, or is it?
Well, possibly, yeah. I may rig it to blow up when I die, so.
So what
my
are we...
final act of revenge to the feds for stealing it. You know, I made out with everything, you know, the way it worked out for me. But a lot of my friends and some older couples at the time got totally screwed because they didn't have the right building permit or the right something or other. They wanted to stay just as bad as me. It's literally... really a terrible thing to do to these people. Just broke their hearts, you know. Be just no different than wherever you guys live. Someone say, sorry, we're taking your house and we're going to give you an eighth of what you paid for it and see you later. That's exactly what happened to these people.
So it was just they used eminent domain to just take it.
And then they devalued the property because some of the water issues and things that were going on. I mean, I could have, I paid $7,000 for my lot, which was the same. And that was in 71, which is a lot of money. Back then, I could have bought any lot in the San Juans, a waterfront lot, for $7,000, which would be worth probably $1 million now. And everybody got like $2,000 a lot 17 years later because of those issues. And I've been to every island up there. There is no island like this in the San Juans. So it was kind of a, you know, a crummy deal for people. And like I say, I just made out because I sort of end up with a private island. But because I went to a real estate agent and said I want a marina and a house on the bank and so forth and so on, it'd be $40 million.
I guess I don't really understand what you did differently than these other people. I mean, how is it that...
Well, we all fought it in Congress to be able to, the people that had substantial buildings, and like I say, there was only 20 of us that were that interested in really, really staying. Some others did, but not to a real big degree. So, and it's not unusual. Like in Yellowstone, Yosemite, there's people that have private property there. So, I mean, it's not an unusual thing, but they really wanted to kick everybody off because obviously that's the simplest way to manage things. Yeah, but once we got congressmen involved and so forth, people said, yeah, no, you need to respect those people's rights. So it did boil down to the 20 of us. And there'd be more of those people would be here if they would have chosen a life use.
I see. So life use was put out there on the table as one of the options.
Yeah,
and for life use, they got like a couple of $1,000 back.
Yeah, or, some of them wasn't even the money. I mean, right. I mean, I was just a young kid at the time. Some of these people had money, but they just thought life use, I'm going to be old, and 25 years is a good time. But 25 years went real fast, and they realized they made a mistake. And so, you know, that's just kind of the way it went. So it was about 3 years ago when the last couple that had rights to be here left. So that left me the only person that could come here. So out of the 20 people, I think there was six that actually had cabins. The rest just had lots so they could come. In fact, the people with lots could only get 15 years. You had to have an actual structure to take life use or something.
And they couldn't put a structure on
I can't even expand mine now, you know. So you were stuck with whatever you had.
But you can repair it.
Yeah. If it burnt down, I could rebuild.
I mean, what were the sort of infrastructure issues? You mentioned water problems.
And then there were some issues where they were saying that some of the lots would encroach on these rhinoceros ocelots, the one that make the holes. And so that was a real move to protect the island, because that's the only thing that would really warrant taking it over from people. And they could make some case that the development would cause some damage to them. And that's, you know, questionable. Maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't have. We could have had our own safeguards, too. But the reality is, it was for the best for it to be a refuge.
And when do the ocelots breed? I mean,
They're here now. They come in late at night to their nests.
So do you know about how many are nesting on the island now?
I think there's close to like 30,000. And I think there can be. Seagulls seem to have gotten a little less. So I think there's maybe 13 or 12,000 or up, sometimes up to 18,000 seagulls. And there's eagles circling us.
So now, have you seen the actual physical shape of the island changing much over the years?
North side's eroding and nothing's going to stop it. It's just going to keep eroding. Yeah. And it's really gotten worse over the last 5 years. We've seen bigger slides than ever, because we used to routinely walk up against the cliffs and look for things. And now we're kind of a little more careful, given all the slides we've seen. But there's nothing that can stop that north end. Like this, none of this is eroding. And where my cabin is, it's not eroding either. But that north side, nothing's going to stop it. So eventually, probably the island will just be a big spit like that. Well, we can go take another little peek at another area here.
Now, so do you know anything about how these developers got their hands on the land?
Well, way back in the turn of the century, I think the government had given it to some war veterans or whatever. So the people, there were some people that homesteaded out here a couple different times in the, you know, the early part of the century.
Are there any remnants of those homesteads out here?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of spots where you can see where there used to be a windmill and a well. But not much has really happened here until, I think, in the early 60s, Martin Durkin, that one guy that was a big politician down in Olympia, he bought it and had like a game preserve out here where he would, he had like a little hunting club for his friends. And the developers bought it from him to then do their little island dream with all the thousand lots. And this is where the bird researchers that I've just left hang out, which it was just a private house. And then when the people left, when it got taken over, then they used it for their, for research purposes.
So they come up here sometimes for weeks on end? And
yeah, they're usually here, well, they used to be here like 3 or 4 months. Now they're only here for a couple months, if even that. And they're studying the seagulls. But they're doing behavior rather than biology, so that feds aren't too much interested in what they're doing. They could tell you stuff about seagulls. You just wouldn't, half of it you don't want to know, but it's amazing what
they
know.
We just saw some really nasty behavior out there among those gulls.
Oh, yeah, they do crazy stuff. And these guys can tell you what the different sounds mean. They make about 18 different sounds. And
they can actually translate for us.
Yeah, to a bit. There's only one eagle's nest out here, and it's back in the woods back there. There's more woods there than it actually looks like. You get back there, you're really in the woods. There can be, I've seen as many as 30 flying around, but only one pair is actually nested here.
So now they're the only predators on the island, as far as you know? Are there rats on the island?
Oh, no. There's only one pair of hawks, and there's an owl.
Horned owl.
Yeah, giant horned owl.
Great horned owl.
Great horned owl, that's right. No, there's the only mammals are the deer, which are relatively new, and then there's chipmunks, shrews, and garter snakes. That's the only mammals. But there's no rats or rabbits or anything like that.
So how long have the deer been here? Were the deer here when you first came?
No, they've only been here maybe 15, 20 years. Yeah, they swim all around the San Juans. It's probably more unusual that they didn't swim out here earlier. But they've got a paradise out here. No predators, no anything. So.
Oh, there's one to the left.
Yeah, that's a good size. Yeah, my friends that hunt drool when they come over here.
Is their population therefore growing out here?
Well, it doesn't seem to grow much. I think they've kind of maxed out around the 60 or so. And then,
so the biologists don't really have any concerns about them?
No, actually, the Fish and Wildlife don't. They are concerned that they're stomping some of the auklet nests. I don't think they're really doing anything that's ever going to be detrimental to the species. The only thing that's really causing a problem is the eagles. There used to be lots of cormorants out here, and the eagles would totally chase those off.
Yeah. Cormorants used to breed out here?
Oh, yeah. There was a big nest, some nests on the hill where we drove up, and some nests down by my house. And
are they ground nesters also?
Yeah. And they made real interesting nests, these big mounds of like twigs, but like that. Another 20 years, eagles are going to be a pest like crows. They're starting to nest places they wouldn't normally.
I guess they've certainly come back from the DDT years. They were in danger.
There's places in Alaska where the people can't even live a normal life because of the eagles. They're taking their cats and dogs and eating all their food and just making a mess everywhere. But they're definitely impacting that refuge here, so that's a problem they're going to have to deal with. The deer, they're just wasting their time. But they don't want to approach that, but I'm kind of going to get on their case about that. The one little lookout area here, well, that's really interesting. I'll stop and go right up just about 100 feet up there. Let's see. I'm going to go shut it off since we know it's... I've got to keep checking that anyway. Make sure I keep... Well, I have help. Ooh, okay. Walk carefully, but it should be pretty smooth. Used to be a real nice house right up here. And if it was still here, half of it would be over the cliff. But when I first came here, it's probably 60 feet in front of the house.
So that's really that much has carved off.
The place is at least 60 feet since I've been here. But, They can just be real careful here because this way you can see down.
Pretty sheer edge there.
That could be the end of your radio career.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's close enough, Mahal.
But we found a lot of fossils here. So right along here is where we find the woolly mammoth teeth and some tusks. Yeah. Hundreds of the teeth have been found. I'll show you when we get to my cabin.
Would they have been up living up here? Or
no, and actually they're washing out from a pretty low level down there, so it would have been whatever. So
well, I think the dating of that one down there was 100,000 years.
Wow. Yeah. So really old.
Yeah, we found maybe three tusks and hundreds of teeth. I mean, I haven't found hundreds, but the people around, I've probably found 20 myself. Yeah, so they must have been like herds of buffalo back in their day, you know, just everywhere. Yeah.
So now, was this island cleared at some point? I mean, it's kind of amazing to me that it's grasslands like this as opposed to being covered with trees.
Yeah, no one's ever been here enough to ever have cleared it. You know, it would have never been practical to do, so it must have been metals. But when you read about when Captain Vancouver came over, because he's the one that named the island, he said it reminded him of like the gardens of Europe. So I guess there were lots of wildflowers and things here. So there must have just, for whatever reason, there must have been pretty much always a metal there.
Back at the van, there was a minor miracle.
Oh, wait a minute.
It started.
How could that happen?
Well...
That's weird.
You know, I've been real lucky in life, you know, for the most part. And when it comes to machines, I don't know what it is. They'll break down. In fact, I was joking with my friend. Well, I wasn't joking. I was going, you know, because I always had boats and cars and stuff. I said, you know, I'd like to take flying lessons and, you know, and go some places and do some things. And they said, well, with your luck with machines, I'd stay out of airplanes. I go, yeah, you're probably right.
Finally, Blue Water took us to his little cabin with its big deck and its wall of windows facing out toward the deep late afternoon blues of the Olympic Range across the dazzling waters of Discovery Bay.
Here, you can see him.
It looks like you could walk right down the bluff here, or is that an illusion?
Yeah, we walked up it the other day when we went off. So yeah, this is so I can't, because the winds are so strong, I can't have any window that opens in the front, because they don't make one that won't let either dirt in or air in, so I learned that the hard way. So over the next month, I'll paint the whole outside and get rid of all that stuff, so that's still my goal, is to get the outside finished and paint it kind of interesting, do some interesting things. So this is just a little secret back room.
This is a nice spot.
Yeah, it's
got your bed in the right place.
Once I'm here, I never want to leave you. I can lay there and watch the eagles fly by and the sun come up and the moon come up, and so that's kind of fun.
We sat for a while out on the deck, looking at the view, marveling at Blue Water's good fortune.
When we looked around, there were only like three or four bank ones left, and I think the two other ones were over there on the cliffside. I kind of minored in geology. I knew that one, that looked real iffy as far as the land, but also, you know, that was back in the early 70s with my friends, and I could just see one of us falling off the cliff. So I said, no, we don't want a cliff that you can die off of, you know. If I would have bought over there, I could have life use, but not life use of anything there is. It could be gone. Yeah. That would have been really disheartening.
I also think the view of the Olympics is so...
Oh, no, as I've gotten to know the island and stuff, I mean, just lucky fate, this is probably one of the coolest spots on the entire island, just for a lot of reasons. Wow, the wind has really come up.
Eventually, the fading light and the rising wind forced us to our feet, and after once again hot-wiring the van, Blue Water drove us back to the marina. Our last view of him as we headed back out to the bay was with his head under the hood of the van, struggling to get it to start again. He had forgotten and switched it off to say goodbye, and this time it was refusing to spark back to life. With Marty Bluewater, the last living legitimate resident of Protection Island, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.